And welcome to the Journeys of Peace podcast. I'm Jackson Eddy.
And I'm Terry Elton.
Terry, what is the Journeys of Peace podcast?
The Journeys of Peace podcast is where we learn stories from the Lutheran Church of Peace people. And who's our storyteller today, Jackson?
We have
Terry Woodman.
Thanks for being with us, Terry.
I thank you very much for asking.
We're just here to really learn about your story and have you tell a little bit about some questions. We've given Terry some questions in advance, and I get to ask the first question. Terry, think back to when you were a kid. What was a favorite story from your childhood?
Well, I guess I don't have one specific story, but my dad would talk about his childhood. Which I always thought was extremely interesting. It was so different than my childhood. Huh. He was raised in Gradle, Minnesota. And one of the most interesting things I always thought is that he always told me that his grandpa, Jeremiah Woodman, lived in the garage and not in the house. That was like 1941. It was almost like the Old West, huh. Is what I always thought, that uh-huh. This grandpa would be wearing a big hat and have a six shooter, and it turned out it wasn't that way at all. He was just an old man that lived in an uninsulated garage, and he burned wood for heat.
Wow.
And he would pay my dad and his three other brothers 2 bits a cord for wood. And to me, it's like,
wow,
what's 2 bits, Dad? And he said, 25 cents. And it's like, that won't even buy a candy bar.
Yeah, you know? Think about that.
I was thinking, a whole cord of wood, that's a lot of work. And he goes, yeah, and he burned a lot of wood in that little garage with a little stove next to his bed. But that's where he lived. And I thought, that's just horrible. Why would he not be living in the house? And my dad explained, because that's how he grew up, in small shanties, shacks.
Huh.
And it was better to be in there than outside in the elements.
Yeah.
So that was always very interesting how he grew up. And he talked about riding around town in Gradle on a wagon pulled by horses, collecting scrap steel for the war effort.
Oh, wow.
And that's another thing I never, right. You know, Oakdale, Minnesota, right. There were no horses, number one. Right. You know, everybody had cars, and we had a nice house and indoor plumbing, and that was all the way it was. Very, you know, it was very comfortable. And I kept on thinking, what was it like for Jeremiah? And then I started thinking back further, Jeremiah and his brother Lorenzo, when they came to Minnesota.
Right.
And, you know, they came like to Waltons or some other old Western people you'd see coming into the state of Minnesota on a wagon with horses. And it's like, it was just so foreign to me. But it's always so interesting.
That's really cool. And I appreciate, like, thinking about how little, how sparse people lived, what they lived on and what they needed. I, too, have my dad's grandpa were settlers to near Battle Lake, Minnesota, and they found the first shanty that they built, and they actually took it apart, and my dad and my brothers went, and they found it and took it apart from this land that these people had and tried to put it back together, and they were talking about just the size of it was so small, and I'm sure, like, you could see through the, I mean, it's old, right, but it was not insulated like we would think, right, and that it's just incredible to think about that.
Yeah, when I would go in the old garage at my grandma's house, because she had a modern house, like a Rambler.
Huh.
But there was an older house that was there that burned down. But I'd sneak in the garage, and I was told, don't you mess around in the back of the garage. Well, what do you do when you're 10 years old? You go in the back of the garage, you mess around. And there was a wool, like, blanket that was hung around the ceiling down to the floor. And I pulled that back, and there was the cot, and there was a little wood stove, and a little tin cup. I imagine that's what he drank his coffee out of. And then I kind of like, wow, that's where he lived? That's horrible.
Wow.
But he lived to be 95, you know, and we'd be lucky to live to be 80.
Yeah.
And he didn't, you know, no modern medicine. He ate side pork and rutabagas and heated his little shanty with a little tiny wood stove. Just,
if you could talk to a younger version of yourself, what would you say?
Besides, what's wrong with you? I grew up, I still am, very shy. I grew up very, very shy and kind of afraid of new things.
Huh.
And I think the one thing I would say to myself is be brave. And as my father-in-law always said, shaking his hands, don't sweat the petty stuff. Hmm. You know, because now at my age, now I'm thinking everything that I've gone through, like, kid, it would have been fine. Don't worry about it. It'll be just fine.
So I find it interesting to say that you were shy. Your wife is not.
No, that's why we
So
met.
I'm curious, right? Like a shy versus a very extroverted person, what drew you to her, and how has that changed any of that?
Well, it's an interesting story because I met my wife when I was 5.
Really?
Yeah, she's my sister's best friend.
Huh.
My sister is 4 years older than I am. Julie's 5 years older than I am. And she would come over, Girl Scouts or whatever. And I was just attracted to her as a friend, you know? So, yeah, got to know her back then. And then when we both got older, my sister was going to move, her and her husband. And so they asked me to come over and help. And there was Julie again. So we got reacquainted. And yeah, that's who I fell in love with.
So really just that long history really just set the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, she became my best friend and she still
Yeah.
is.
Like I think back to your shy high school self, right? Or college age self, right? Young adult self, and you were looking ahead to your life. And now today, looking back, how has your life been different than you imagined when you were younger?
Well, when Julie and I first got together and we first got married, I took out a piece of paper that I had in this little box that I kept all my mementos in. And it was a list of what I expected my life to be like. I
How
was
old were you when you wrote that?
about 10.
Okay.
I was going to be married. I was going to have two kids, two houses, a dog, you know, and a well-paying job. And yeah, I got all of that and more.
Wow.
You know? At that time, I didn't include having a church, which is something about myself that would change when we talked about, you know, what would you do, tell your younger self, and you know, don't be afraid of religion. It's not that scary. But at that time, it was scary. Being Catholic, you know, the priest and everything was a little, I don't want to say voodoo, but a little off. Want to stay away from it. Got to stay off the altar. And so, yeah, it would change things a little bit. But yeah, it was great growing up. And my wife was surprised when she read that. Because at that time, we only had one house. And she goes, so when's the second house going to happen? No, that didn't happen for another 10 years. But anyway, the two kids and a loving family. So what more could you ask for?
That's pretty amazing that you're 10, like that's a pretty wise 10-year-old in some way. I mean in some ways it's pretty ordinary, but in other ways it couldn't have it easily couldn't have happened that way, right?
Oh, very much so. You know, I'm not going to elaborate a lot about my childhood, but there were some bad things that occurred in my childhood, and I think that's kind of what brought me to write that note. Like, this is how my life is going to be different than my current life I have right now. I kind of set this the stage.
And thinking about faith in your life, you said, you know, you tell yourself, don't be scared of faith. It's going to be okay. Have there been any challenges that you have faced that have impacted your faith?
Absolutely. And not in a positive way, Jackson. My dad had cancer and was sick for a very long time. And I was always very upset and mad with God that he would do that. Would put any human being through that kind of torture. And my mom was also sick, and my father-in-law and my mother-in-law. And we had a problem at the church we were going to at the time, so we just kind of broke off. And it took about 15 years. What really brought us back to church is when my son was going to get married. We contacted the office secretary at Beaver Lake Lutheran Church. Nice lady named Joan. She just recently passed away. But we said, you know, can my son get married there? Actually, my wife asked that question. She goes, absolutely, kiddo. Not a problem. Because we weren't a member of the church. It is the church where Julie grew up, but she was not a member of it anymore either. So just to be welcomed back into that church and then to have my son go through that ceremony at church. Kind of said, no, maybe I was wrong all these years. Maybe it wasn't God saying, no, I'm not going to help him. It was me not saying, or maybe me saying, I don't believe you can help me. And then once I allowed that to happen, then I think faith didn't come rushing down through the doors into me. One of the best examples I can have is that when my mom was very sick, had dementia, She was having struggles at the nursing home with extended care where she was staying, and I was driving to work, and I was like taking care of all the financial things for her. My sister was taking care of the health things, but I was just so frustrated on the way to work. And my pulse rate was up, and I was almost sick, and I said, God help me. And instantaneously, a calm came over me.
Wow.
And I think that's when faith touched me again and brought me back.
It's a pretty powerful story,
Terry. It's extremely powerful to me.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it's the one story I always share, because when you least expect it, Pastor Charlie from the church we were going to before said, if you have struggles, bring it to the altar. And I never really knew what that meant until that moment, when I just kind of threw myself and said, I just need help. And the fact that I think I said that out loud to God or to the windshield of the car allowed it to come back into me and just gave me some calm.
Right. And I think it's hard, especially being young like I am, it's hard to imagine struggles like that and challenges if you haven't been through them. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm glad that it brought you back to faith.
In reference to yourself, or maybe Terry and myself, your struggles are always individual to yourself.
Yeah.
They don't have to be big struggles, just a struggle.
Well, I heard also some of your earlier frustration started, there's an air of the church part of faith was maybe a block or hard to understand, or like this sense of like do's and don'ts, right? Yep. Like this whole kind of religious grammar and behaviors that, like, at least for me growing up as a pastor's kid, I just felt like the bar was too high. I'm going to screw up. Mm-hmm. I also heard what brought you back was both a church seeing you and listening to your story, and you going directly to God. Not the churchy politics or the rules, but of a community that was open to hear your story and celebrate with you your kid's wedding. But I wonder if a different set of people around your family, when there was hard times with cancer or whatever, and just, you know, would have changed things. Because I think over the years, church has gotten in the way of people being ministered to, right? Of being held in really hard times and saying, yeah, I don't know how God fits into this story. I really don't have answers. But I know that we can hold you, right? That's two different things, to know if why God did something and to surround people that are suffering in a really human way.
You know, I was raised Catholic, and Catholic is not a bad religion. I just, we're Lutheran now.
It's just different, yeah.
But the way you were at that time in the 60s, the priest was like the connection to God.
Right.
And so anytime you had to talk to God or ask for God's help, it's almost you had to go through the priest for that.
Right.
And I think that became the roadblock for a lot of people like myself to get direct access.
Right.
You know, where as an adult, once I grew up and I needed some help, it just came out of me.
Yeah.
And God was probably waiting for me to say, hey, you need help, you ask, I'm there.
Yeah.
And I just never asked.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of it falls directly on me.
So Jackson and I were just at a Bible study at my other job, and we were talking about when the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness and they didn't have food to eat and they were complaining. Mm-hmm. And Aaron and Moses said, just complain directly to God.
Mm-hmm.
And God heard their complaints and fed them. God can handle the complaints, the anger, the longings, the sadness, and invites us, right, to come directly. When you look back on your life, how do you want to be remembered?
I want to remember someone with great faith, someone with a lot of empathy for others, of course, a good family man and father and husband, but an honest person, too.
If your kids or long-term friends were to say attributes about you, would they say some of those things?
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not the kind of guy that kind of pushes and looks for that.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm the person that will volunteer at church to fix things and do things. And some, as my son described it, when you do things for other people, you get accolades.
Huh.
And it feels good.
Uh-huh.
When I was working with my young fellow that was going to be confirmed, we had a meeting and we talked about the Holy Spirit.
Uh-huh.
And what I told him is sometimes you do these things and it refills the Holy Spirit inside of you.
Hmm.
And that gives you the ability to do more good, to do more things.
I love that. I think sometimes we make the Holy Spirit into this thing that's just, it is big to understand, right? But sometimes it's a simple nudge. Hey, there's somebody in need, go help them.
All right. Well, Terry, last question. What is one change you'd like to see in the world?
Well, there's a lot of things that I'd like to see in the world right now. But I think what could lead to those changes would be if the world could have more empathy towards each other.
Yeah.
And as Pastor Liz talked in her sermon last Sunday, you know, maybe some forgiveness.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about Judas and understanding what he was going through.
Yeah.
And how that would help us if we could understand what other people are going through more. Have a little more empathy towards them and understanding.
I think that's so critical. And I think coming out of the pandemic, coming out of the George Floyd stuff, coming out of the world things that are going on, the divide that we see politically and around all kinds of stuff. Like if I take all these big issues of the last 3 years and I think, man, if we just started with that. Any other stories you want to tell us?
None I can think of right now. I mean, even when I first got these questions from and I read through them, it took a while for me to figure out what exactly I want to tell you, because as you go through life, there are many stories.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think us human beings are wired to keep the bad ones and not really keep the good ones up front where they should be.
I like that.
You know, we think about war, we think about poverty, we think about my grandpa Jeremiah living in this lousy, stinky, leaky garage that's got a wood heat. But then, you know, the story that my dad got to tell me about it was bringing it a little bit further forward. And you know what? It was part of his childhood.
Yeah.
And it taught him some things. And it taught me to appreciate what I have a little bit more. I always wanted more as a kid, but I appreciated what I had. So, no, it's not really anything else I can elaborate on.
I love that idea of sometimes we hold the hard things more. They have a bigger mark on us than maybe even just a lot of little positive things that happen every day, right? And that's a great reminder to just like, hey, somebody was just great to me at the grocery store today.
I agree. It's kind of like being upset with the church and asking God for help, and he didn't have a lightning bolt come down. He just, just felt better.
Mm-hmm.
And to remember that feeling, and that's why I probably tell that story a lot. It's important to keep that feeling.
I like it. Thanks, Terry Woodman, for being
a
Journeys of Peace podcast storyteller.
Yeah. All right. Stay tuned for the next episode.